Thanks for joining the podcast today. Before we get started, I just wanted to make a little announcement and kind of an explanation. I'm not a professional podcaster. I just do this for fun, and it's not my full-time job, and you should be able to tell that by the quality that is produced. With that said, I've always made a promise to myself that I didn't want one of these podcasts to come through with crappy sound, missed mics, non-recorded guests, and yet here's my first one having done so. I had a conversation with Kurt Mills and Chris Flower recently, to which I discovered after the fact, due to a missing portion of my audio equipment, that their mic was not recording. What we ended up getting was their portion of the conversation recorded off of my mic on the other side of the table with a noisy background. This is the preceding conversation you're about to hear. Enjoy. I do apologize, and we will have them on again. My first memory of Contador is actually 2007 doing Paris-Nice, riding with the Discovery team with Lance, Levi, and Tom Danielson, and he's in second place going into the last stage. I don't know if you've seen that circuit where they go over some nasty climbs, they come down into Nice, and they barrel along. It's kind of like the San Remo, where, you know, a climb and then a finish along kind of the promenade. And he comes, he has his whole team just fully, I imagine they're juiced at this point, fully gunning for him. He attacks over the top, he drops David Rebellin, and actually wins by just a few seconds the overall, but by winning like 30 seconds that day. So then we bookend his career with the Angrelu yesterday, attacking after the last climb, holding on the lead, and doing his pistol shot. I don't know if you saw that over the finish, but quite dramatic. And that's how I see Contador's career, going from my personal view, from a attack off the front in a daring fashion to the finish in a daring fashion. Welcome to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is your host, Tyler Yonke, with Kurt Mills, Chris Flower. We're broadcasting from the Depot Bay Coffee Shop in Auburn. Is that correct, Kurt?
That is correct, yeah.
And Chris, welcome. Thanks for joining us today with your expertise as well. We just go over the Angrelu yesterday and the stage that happened, stage 20. And I imagine both of you guys end up watching that.
Yeah, I watched it. That was a great stage.
I saw a bulk of it. I didn't get to see the very end, though, so I was leaving for a ride.
Oh, well, the end is kind of the bulk of the race.
That's kind of the most important part.
Yeah.
So, well, I didn't see the pistol shots.
I kind of rewatched a little bit of it yesterday, and just to kind of see, like, so we had two Cat 1 climbs before the finish. And on the first Cat 1 climb, we had some guys on the descent. It's all rainy, very, very nasty, a little bit of rain. And we saw Mike Woods, Zacharin, and De La Cruz all get distance and then fighting their way back. What I ended up reading was Woods said De La Cruz was gapped them bad. And so he and Zacharin had to chase back along with De La Cruz as well. Then De La Cruz on the next second to last climb, he attacks over the top. And I think he was a little panicked about his ability to go downhill due to how bad it put them into the hurt. And then he ends up crashing out of the race altogether. I was trying to see when Contador went, and it looked like it was between that last climb and then the climb to the finish. Did you notice at all where he actually attacked off?
So I don't know where he attacked it. From what I hear, he attacked on the descent of Cordal and Pantano. It sounded like got around Sky. It was just full gas for Contador. Contador took a little while to get around. He actually said that. I thought Sky was blocking him a little bit.
Oh, wow.
But he got up to Pantano, and Pantano just did his thing, pulled him into the bottom of Angrelu. We didn't see coverage of it. That was unfortunate, because I think that would have been amazing to watch.
Because when they actually kind of panned back to him, he had almost like 30 seconds, it looked like. But they were starting a long gradual part before they got to the hit, the real steep stuff, last 5-6 kilometers. Did you also notice that there was Enrique Mas, it was a Spanish rider for Quickstep? And they said he had been part of Contador's development team. And he was, you could tell he was selling out for...
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a cool... that was cool to see him, you know, run up on another young Spanish rider. And I think there ended up being another Spanish rider they picked up from the early break. And I can't remember...
Well, could have been him. But I do remember Yates was in the group. And he starts taking some serious pulls as well.
Right.
So it's like all for one for Contador getting his last shot, I guess.
Everybody against Sky. No one wants to see Sky win. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Chris, you've mentioned to me how you dislike... You're not a big fan of Froome, I should say. So you're kind of in this... What do you think of the tactics on the day for Contador getting the win and kind of these other guys joining in the mix?
So just to clarify, I don't dislike Froome as much as I just think that they kind of contribute to boring racing. And I think that this Vuelta is another example of that, where it's just, you know, the Sky train dragging attackers back over and over and over, and it's not that exciting to watch. So that's kind of the source of my dislike of Froome's tactics. In terms of the final stage, I thought it was a good way for Contador to kind of close out his career. I think it's good that there was some other riders that were willing to contribute to that as kind of a sign of respect, and just whether it's railing against Sky or if it's just, hey, Contador, we know you're closing out your career in your home country. Here's a little kind of token of our appreciation. I think, you know, whichever way you look at it, I think it was a nice touch.
Yeah, so I'm a little mixed on the nice touch part, just simply because of that whole clenbuterol issue that he had going on earlier. And like I said to the start there, his riding with his riding with Discovery and those guys of that era, and being able to basically get rid of them, I'm tending to think he was fueled at some point as well. It's a little more of a storied history than what we want to say.
Right.
But with that said, finishing up that climb was, I don't know if you get a more dramatic, it's the Babe Ruth calling it on his last at bat type of thing. Not that he did. Kurt, maybe you have a reference that would be better. The Isaiah Thomas in the three-pointer at the buzzer to go out in his career or something. I mean, it's kind of like what it is, if you think about it. The ultimate for a climber on one of the most wicked climbs ever.
Yeah, I don't know, like Willis Reed walking out for the New York. No, yeah, okay. I don't have a basketball analogy that could compare it.
How about cricket?
It was a great moment. It was great to see Contador win. Contador's, like, again, favorite racer to watch if you put aside the clenbuterol mess. And then you just talk about pure style. The way he races is like kind of like a Cat 5, who attacks way too early at the beginning of a climb or going into a climb, and you're like, that'll never work. And it doesn't work for Alberto as much as it used to, but it was cool to see it work yesterday.
Yeah, and it actually made the last week, I think I mentioned this to you yesterday, where you see a lot of these transitional stages that are kind of boring. Now, the Vuelta puts more climbing in those, but he lit it up from, you know, almost, well, after his stomach problems went away. He was going start to finish. You know, there were transitional stages this last week where he decided, I mean, he was on the attack. So it actually made that whole race more fun. So Froome and his formulaic team, I think Chris without that team would still get a lot of these results, because he's such a dynamic, he's a great climber as far as not to watch, but actually what he does. And, you know, the earlier on in his career when he was winning these, it was more the Lance Armstrong attack first mountain stage, you know, put minutes on everybody and then kind of hang on. I mean, there's no doubt that I think he would be able to handle himself with these guys, even without such a strong team. Yay, nay? What's your input?
I think he would. And I think that would also lead to more exciting racing, because you would see him attack more frequently, or you'd see more action and dynamic racing. And I think that would be better for the viewers than just watching him sit fifth wheel on his train and drag people back over and over and over.
So maybe the solution of having these shorter stages, you know, brings that into a nasty climb to begin with, a shorter stage, and then, you know, a finishing climb type of thing where when I say this, hoping to dump his team, and then Walt Poles, you know, gets second on the stage again and
right.
Top six or so on the race.
Is that where he finished?
Yeah, I think he jumped Woods, so he ended up sixth place with his ride yesterday.
Okay.
So, and just back to Woods, he had mentioned yesterday that digging so deep on that one, coming back up after he had been dropped, and digging so deep to get back really put him in the red. But, you know, I he was very impressive for this race as well. Quite a revelation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we saw that he's been coming. If you go back to the Tour Utah last year, he was somebody yeah. that I'd never watched before, and all of a sudden there he was, hanging with the best climbers, at least in the United States, and some of the World Tour teams. So it was cool to see him right there with Froome. Even on there was another stage earlier this week where he finished right on his wheel, 50 seconds past. Was it Nibali?
That was the one where the Lotto guy, I think, won, and they had a short pitch up to the finish, and Nibali, yeah, you're right, lost some time.
Okay. Yeah, but yeah, it's great to see Woods riding well, and I'm assuming he's staying with Cannondale.
So I heard an interview with him yesterday after the race, and they asked him, you know, exactly that, and he said he wasn't going to talk about what, you know, his future, so to speak, was. I think he was did he have just a one-year contract? Actually, I don't know about this, so anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I kind of heard rumors that he was potentially linked to Sky for next year, and I think that started to come to the front when Cannondale was failing a couple weeks back. So I haven't heard much as to any developments on that front, but I think it'd be good if he stayed with the new Cannondale or whatever they're calling themselves. Just because it's good to have a little bit of parity across the racing teams instead of having him become just another super domestique.
Yeah, no, I agree. And his breakout Vuelta was impressive, and it's good to see. And I think he's got that in his future. You know, there's some other guys. Lopez was the big guy in the middle of the race that everyone was talking about, this grand. And he faltered yesterday along with Eru pretty bad. And it was good to see that Woods wasn't part of that. Okay, so one quick.
So just follow, oh, yeah. He is staying with Cannondale for 2 more years.
Oh, you got that confirmation? You just.
The internet's confirmed that he's staying.
Sweet. With Cannondale for 2 more. Well, good, good. Kurt's in the know. One thing I will bring to your attention. Contador had a pretty good lead going into that final climb. At one point, I think he was up over a minute. And then he ended up winning just by 19 seconds over Poles and Froome. So they really, actually the last kilometer, 2 kilometers, they were down by 30 seconds, 20 seconds. And then, you know, they really closed it in. So what's your thinking? There's a tweet online. Someone posted this here, and it was retweeted and then added to by Neil Rogers. Let me just say what this guy said. Okay. And, you know, I'm going to read this off, and people's air, you know, way they write isn't always easy for reading. But anyway, so much this. The fact that they got the directive to even go for it is why everyone dislikes Sky so much. Like going for 2 when the game is won. So that's what that guy's saying. They're just kind of rubbing it in your face. Neil Rogers replies, realize that it's sport and some will disagree, but if Poles had sprinted Contador for stage win, would have been terrible PR for Sky. So what's your guys' take on that about chasing down Contador, giving him the win, and then kind of ripping on Sky online for saying that they're rubbing it in their faces?
I think it's a tough one. I think, you know, given the moment, I think it would have been borderline appropriate for them to just let him ride off solo into the sunset to end his career. I think at this point, Froome has it in the bag. There's no real benefit for Poles to do anything to improve his position. So just, I think it would have made sense to let Contador ride off solo. So if they did get the green light and they kind of chased him down, and whether Froome took it upon himself to kind of hold himself back a little bit, I think that's a good show of respect and sportsmanship.
What do you think, Kurt? What's your take on that?
I agree. I kind of think Sky did maybe hold back a little bit. The way Froome was smiling as he came across the line at the end tells me maybe they weren't going all out there. I'm glad the way it ended, but yeah, there's some questions as to whether or not they fully went to try and win that stage. I don't think they did.
So what do you have? What do you see? I disagree. I like to see a winner be a winner, and Contador's efforts, with that said, were amazing anyway. But what do you have? What do you feel about like Chris Froome? He's got this lieutenant, Walt Poles, who's doing amazing work. What are his opportunities to win a stage? And you're getting a chance to win on the Angry Lou, and this guy is pulling you along. And it almost appeared that Froome gave him the go-ahead. Maybe they didn't. Maybe he held back in the end and said, no, we're not going to do this. But do you give your sportsmanship to Contador? Is that over your dedication to your teammate and letting him get a win for once?
I think you get rid of your biggest pain in your side for Froome by saying, look, go out on your own terms. You win the stage in your home country. You never come back.
Oh. Well, yeah, but there's no guarantee of that. And he was retiring anyway.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. We think about a guy his age winning a stage and being so dynamic at the Vuelta.
Like Chris Horner?
Exactly. So that's all I heard when Horner was winning, that this was incredible, being as in it's not credible, the ride he did. But we're not hearing that at all from Contador. And Contador, maybe you're saying it. I'm not online. Online with the commentators, the main journalists. You know, Neil Rogers isn't tweeting stuff about, oh, this is a little suspect, you know.
Yeah, no, and true, no one's saying that in the pro peloton in general, but
do you think that anybody in the pro peloton would kind of speak out against that, though?
No, I don't.
Right, and then given the speculative past of Contador, it seems like to even mention it as a commentator, you're just going to kind of dig cycling into a deeper hole. So it's like, all right, give him his moment, let him go away, start new.
Yeah, I actually, there was a Spanish journalist that was on one program, and he was talking about how actually they did like marketing stuff. And after Contador's positive, he then got so much press about it that he became one of the most sought after celebrities in Spain. So it actually has seemed to have boosted his popularity in a weird way. So I don't know. No other comments about that, huh?
No, I mean, it wouldn't surprise. I guess it just wouldn't surprise me. We've seen every generation in the last three or four that clearly there's been scandals. So it wouldn't surprise me.
So we're recording this as the last stage is going on. Do you have any results, Kurt, on that yet? Okay. So I'm assuming we'll just go with the assumptions that they're going to stay safe and upright. So Chris Froome is going to end up winning the Vuelta. You're going to have David Villela win the mountains jersey. I don't know if anybody followed that. And it kind of brings into perspective of how a non-climber wins the climbing jersey. Trenton, if he wins the intermediate sprint and the final sprint, he can actually take the points jersey. And then there's all these combined jerseys. They have way too many to really care about. So nothing on the race yet?
They're at 100K to go.
100K. Did you see the women's race this morning?
I did not.
I saw the podium, and I saw Corn Rivera was on the podium. That's all I saw there. Yeah. So speaking of the possible doping situation, so let's talk about this Masters guy that got hit. So we had an issue this last week where a gentleman from Northern California, I don't even know his name, and I guess it doesn't really even matter. Chris, do you know his name? The situation, you want to describe what happened?
Yeah, I don't have a ton of detail on the situation. His name's John. He's out of the Bay Area. And I think the substance that he tested positive for was clomiphene. I don't know much about it. It sounds like he was tested after winning individual pursuit track at a national championship, after having won. But it's unfortunate.
And how much of a ban did he get? 6 months, is that right?
I think it was 6 months, yeah. So I think the USADA report indicated that, you know, they have a little bit of flexibility when it comes to the duration of the ban that they issue. And given the circumstances behind his situation and the evidence that he presented to USADA, they took it upon themselves to say, you know, you weren't necessarily doing this to gain an advantage, so we're going to reduce your suspension to 6 months.
Yeah, so when I first saw that it was 6 months, that was my first thought, that there was something weirder with it, and they're indicating that he had taken a substance under his doctor's orders and several months ago and did not file a TUE, a therapeutic use exemption, right? And so at least letting the USADA know that this is an issue. And then he subsequently, though, he raced during this whole time, and then he ended up going to nationals and getting rid. My thinking as a Masters guy that doesn't really care about some of this stuff, when I say some of this stuff, is like, we don't get tested. It just blatantly don't get tested. You're going to get an out-of-competition test if you're suspected of something. And then you're going to get tested probably at nationals. You just assume that. So when I went to nationals in 2015, I started to, you know, be much more careful about things that were going into my body. Kurt, no comments there. Medically. And I even got the little WADA app on my phone, you know, and it's simple stuff that you wouldn't even think about, you know, for a cold. And you're, oh, I better check this out. For me, it was all along the lines of how bad would it be to be totally innocent of taking something, a nasal spray or what have you, that there's really no concern over, and getting popped at nationals at some random test for, you know, for me, who I'm not really even, it would be ridiculous and it'd be embarrassing and it'd be humiliating.
Right.
So I could see that being part of this guy's thing. But my only problem is he's going to nationals. And when you're going to nationals, you know, there's a possibility of getting tested. So it, there seems to me to be a weird wrinkle on that. I want to be more forgiving and understanding, but he's going to nationals.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think one of the things that's challenging in this instance, as you said, you know, there's a lot of things that are covered through USADA and WADA, and you know, I scanned the announcement when it came out. And it sounds like he was taking the medication in January or February or something like that, and nationals were in June. I don't have those dates concrete, but you know, if he stopped taking it way back in early part of the year and raced in the mid to late part of the year, it's like, well, what's the expected lifespan of that medication in your system? Where it's like, well, if I took it in 2015, do I have to worry about it in 2017?
So what are you saying there? Okay, I mean, because the actual report said something along the lines that the trace amounts in his system were consistent with him taking it several months earlier under a doctor's prescription. So are you saying that you're good with that, or that you're more worried about you doing something similar?
No, I'm saying that it's, you know, I think there needs to be a better understanding from the racer's perspective, where if you're taking something, whether it's under the doctor's direction or not, you need to make sure you know what's going in your system. You need to know what the lifespan of that is. And if it's something where it's going to be in your system for, in this instance, several months, then you should probably pull out the TUE or choose not to race.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And, you know, the weird thing is, back to the nationals, when I went back there, and I think I mentioned this before, they were doing testing for the time trial, the road race, and then the crit. They just, I go to check to see, you know, before the race, you look and they give numbers that those need to basically be tested. And there's no list, and they're like, we're just not testing today. It's Sunday, you know, everyone's going home. And I that is flabbergasting to me, but.
Yeah, and I've seen that before in the races. I think it was not this year, but last year, they were doing some testing at the Chico stage race, and they were doing testing the day of the road race. And at the road race, they said, you know, we'll also be testing tomorrow at the time trial and the crit. So, okay, so the deal. And then you actually show up the day of, and oh, no, there's no testing today. We're not going to do any testing. It's like, well,
and half your field didn't show up, though?
Probably.
In fear of that?
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it'd be nice to see some consistency in the testing and making sure you're, not to say targeting people, but that you're there at the right time.
Yeah. How many times have you been tested, Kurt?
0 times.
Yeah. Same here. I think I was tested a few times back in the, I want to say in the 90s that I was, but I can't even guarantee that that's the case. So
how refined was that testing then?
Well, like I don't even remember other than, yeah, I don't know that it was. You know, I have some weird experiences back then with some teammates that went to Europe, came back, and he was really good and witnessed some transformation or exchange of some weird vials to another, not a teammate, but to someone else. I was never involved in this stuff. I was too low on the totem pole, I imagine, to you know, they're like, what do you say? You can't make a donkey into a racehorse. That's kind of that idea. But you know, that was, anyway, I think it was free and open back then, like we know, and you know, testing, it was probably, you know, you win some big race, then you might have to worry about it. But all right. So any other comments about the Masters doping situation that seems to be prevalent right now?
It's just, I think it's unfortunate.
What about the outrage online?
I think Facebook exploded that day.
Yeah, and for me, like I said, I'm not, you know, 23 years old and my, you know, team is getting nailed and it's kind of like what you hope to be your career. So it's a bunch of these old guys and it's humorous to me. It's sad. And I don't, I guess my outrage level is not high, but I'm not like, you know, dismissing it either. It's kind of like right in the middle.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I guess I didn't see a ton of outrage. I mean, it's just people share it and say, hey, this guy. I mean,
his one of his teammates shared something. He was all pissed off about it. And I say, you know, the liability goes all the way to the team, right? They should be guilty by association.
Right, but again,
no, they shouldn't, Kurt.
But it's social media. It takes nothing to put that little message out there, and people do it and they just kind of throw it away. It didn't seem like it was crazy, especially being that it's a local story for us.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds legit. Let's get to some other local news. How about the Jackson crit that occurred yesterday? Downtown Jackson looked to be quite a nice course. Some steep sections in it. Anybody show up for that for you guys?
I did not race. I did see a video from one of the racers' last laps, and it looked like a really challenging course. It looked like a good course for some really dynamic racing. Not something that would be suited to my abilities, unfortunately.
Probably Brian Zinn's.
It was.
Yeah, I saw that one as well.
Also a guy who weighed in on the master doping scandal. Good stuff.
All right, are we going to air his dirty laundry on the podcast?
No.
All right, I'll just refer everyone to some John Novikoff's post, and you can read there about Zimny. And read a little bit more about what he said about this.
One of the true good guys.
Yes. No, and it was humorous, and it just took a. This is the way it should be. You know, you're starting on a serious note, and it takes a turn for the worse as far as humor goes, and deviates totally 180 degrees off from the intended discussion.
But it was good to hear how serious he took. You know, making sure that he wasn't going to take an illegal substance while he was preparing for nationals or while he was racing in general. And it sort of echoes what you said earlier. You know, you signed up for nationals and then you started really double checking. I don't want to get popped for nasal spray or something like that.
Yeah.
And you know, Brian has friends that would have defended him. You know, whereas he probably would.
Well, you said friends, so yeah, exactly. No, and that's a good point, and it's really tough. You know, look, if something happened to one of you guys, I would, for the most part, I would say, you know, it's ridiculous. You know, we know these guys, but in the end, we don't know, right? I don't know what you do in your home life. I've seen that gig ball and that zipper mask at your house, Kurt.
Well, what did Kale say? He had one wild night.
Yeah, blame it all on Vegas or wherever he was at, Hollywood. Yeah, Jackson, do you have the results there? Do you want to kind of zip through some of them? When you got?
I know that there was 20 racers in the P12 field.
Aria won that, right? Mike Spikes?
He did, yeah. And then I think third was another Mike Spikes guy, Roman Fuller.
Okay. So it looked like it was...
I don't know who was second.
Yeah, sure. If you find that out. So
Ariel Vermont, who was
Iron
Data, 35 plus guy.
Yeah, so you see a top... That's in the P12 field. Top three guys that are pretty good. I mean... Aria won the Santa Cruz.
Roman actually got fourth. Rob Evans got third.
Rob Evans, who is he with?
He's with Team Illuminate, I forgot.
Okay.
Although I don't think he's the best team right now.
Well, much like their kit, maybe he just doesn't list it. You know, their kit's just all black, right?
That's true, yes.
So maybe they're against at all naming their team or having any sponsors on it. So we didn't have a big field there. I didn't show up either. You know, family issues took the day. But it looked to me like a cool race. You look at the results, and it's all very strong guys in all fields, categories that are winning that race. So pretty brutal, right?
Yeah, the 35-plus field was stacked.
When you say stacked, you're saying like field depth?
Champions and world champions, yes.
It's a very high-quality field.
For sure. It looked like a hell of a race. Disappointed in all of us here. Didn't show up.
We did have a conversation about trying to go, and there was some disappointment in my part for not showing up. But right. You know, what are you going to do? You have my son's got baseball and he's got soccer. Stupid thing. So they do normal little league during the year, and then they do like a winter ball. Okay, so he's good. So he's playing winter ball. And he's moving up, so he gets into that. But he also wants to play rec soccer. Ugh. So we've got to he's on a horrible team last year. He's really small, and they put him in goal. And, you know how big those goals are. And he covers, like, you know, 1/20th of the area.
Are we still recording?
Yeah, we're still recording. So yesterday, he really wanted to go play soccer because he didn't even get on the team. He was on such a horrible team last year.
Yeah.
And he didn't get on that team. So we're like, sweet. And he's actually playing that team yesterday. So he skips his baseball practice to go to the soccer. And they get beat by that horrible team last year. It just perpetuates. Rylan, stick with baseball. Okay, so that was my excuse. I had baseball, soccer stuff to go to. So that's my excuse there.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
That's a fair excuse.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, any other fields you want to mention there in the Jackson?
45 plus 1, 2, 3. You had Chris Kane out of Squadra SF. Ariel Vermont also got second in that race. So always a bridesmaid. And Brian Zimney got third, who we mentioned earlier in this podcast. So yeah.
So Zimney was third last week at the district crit, and Herman was third at the district crit, and they're different ones. And Thirsty Bear, right?
Yeah. Since we're in Austin, we should be 35 plus. 3-4 winner was Ryan Chepernich, we'll say, who's actually from Auburn and lives in the area. So.
Yeah, congrats to him. He's been riding with us on our Wednesday ride and tearing it up. I did the Auburn crit with him. Well, we ended up being together. He, me, and Shavak, and he out sprinted me on the last bit. I didn't know who he was at the time, but he does. That didn't surprise me to see that he had won that race yesterday.
Yeah,
kind of up his alley. You guys want to mention anything about Cannondale Drapex new signing, or they're finding a sponsor? What's the name of that? You know,
gosh, the name. Yeah.
All right, Education First.
Swiss. Yeah, what's their new official?
It's Team EF Education First. Draypack powered by Cannondale.
Fantastic.
Or Amblum.
This is. Okay.
That's for short.
We'll have to come up with an acronym for that. Not the NAMBLA one, but the Education First. So, the Swiss company of some sort. And again, Swedish, sorry. Swiss.
Close.
It's close.
Actually, they sounded like John Kerry. Introduced the founder or the owner of a private company to Watchers and got them that relationship going. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, and you know, you, being Kurt, had mocked the Save Argyle campaign online.
True.
Yeah.
Did not contribute.
I did not contribute to that. But
no mug.
I like the Swift Boat campaign.
The Swift Boat?
Well, that's, yeah.
You're talking about John Kerry back in Vietnam?
Right. Yeah, I'm a Swift Boater. What are you talking about?
Well, so I don't know if you know if you remember the whole Swift Boat thing when he was a Swift Boat captain of this. You're shitting me.
No, all right. That's just Save Argyle. This was hashtag.
Hashtag Swift Boat. get the hell out of here. All right. So do you want to talk about that, his NOM service?
No, we could have done this back in 2004 or something.
Okay, so it looks like they're saved, and that's so they're also saying that they're keeping the crowdfunding money and probably the match as well. And I actually think that's good. They said they're going to try to put it into some additional like science and I remember Drapac. Their sponsor Drapac is really big into educating riders for after cycling. And they're going to help fund that project as well. So I think that's fine. I mean, the evidently, according to Vodders and this company, that the whole crowdfunding thing and the interest from everybody really kind of sparked them to take another look at cycling and jump on board. So,
do you know what the crowdfunding total ended up being, or is it still ongoing?
It's ongoing. He said you can still, so there's still that chance for that mug.
So they'll take our money.
As of Friday night, it was a little over $500,000.
Okay.
Yeah, which is pretty solid.
Yeah.
It's nothing like J.J. Watts getting, what, $20 million for Hurricane Harvey. But
there's a missed opportunity there. I got it back.
So that's actually pretty good. The ramifications of it, and this is what I hate about the cycling economics is, you know, a team goes out, and first of all, it just really changes the transfer market. You know, it can have inflated. You know, you lose a whole team, and now those riders are going to, you know, less teams out there, and it can drive one person in that market could really get a high bid from those other ones, which then drives up the whole market because you're squeezing the available resources. So I'm glad to see that left in the sport. All these people that are still being able to keep a job, that's pretty cool. And I might still participate. I like mugs personally, so I might just do it.
You still get your mugs?
He said you still get your mug. And matter of fact, he said you're probably going to get a little more than what you would in put in, which is, you know, let's, yeah, maybe a sticker.
Well, okay, cool.
On the mug.
Yeah. GP Quebec. Did you guys see that result yesterday or Friday, I guess it was?
I saw the result. I didn't catch the race. Not too unexpected, I suppose, in terms of the style of that race and the field.
Yeah.
So be interesting to see how today shakes out as well.
I love the top three, seeing that it was Sagan, Van Avermaet, and Matthews. Kind of, I mean, very similar riders, and each one being on the podium with the other two is pretty, I mean, it's just impressive. It's like you can pick that top three, and then it came to fruition. It's kind of cool to see that in that respect. I think the Montreal race, which is today,
correct,
you might have a similar outcome. I don't know. You know, these guys are prepping for Worlds. So we've got Sagan looking for his three-peat. Is that coined by Riley as well? Didn't he trade, or is it four-peat or three-peat?
Yeah, so yeah, that's true.
Okay, sorry. So checks in the mail.
Yeah.
Chris, let's talk about you real quick.
I never got the three-peat.
I don't know. Did?
I don't think he did. I think that was at the 387, and they never actually got it.
Okay, well, that happens all the time.
Sure.
Say things and just doesn't come out. Chris, let's talk about you real quick. So this is on a personal note. You had some health issues. First of all, how long have you been involved in cycling itself?
I probably would say I've been involved in cycling since mid-year 2013, so not too long.
Okay.
I've been kind of a casual fan before that, but didn't really start getting on my bike and riding hard until May of 2013.
And what did you do in May of 2013? Did you start doing road races, triathlons?
I did a couple of group rides, thinking that it's just a bike, so it'll be easy. So I went out to, I think my first ride was through one of the local clubs out on the South Canal. I think Kirk was there. I more or less embarrassed myself on the bike. I think I got dropped in the warm-up.
Did you have like high ankle like gym socks on?
I did, yeah. I didn't have a kit on. I just went out in like jean shorts and tank top.
No, you're kidding.
It was better than the kit I found you on. Now 2 years later.
That wasn't nice. That doesn't count. So yeah, no, I just jumped into group riding just from the couch, so to speak, or the gym doing weight stuff. And just felt like changing up my fitness regime and jumped into cycling. Went out to a couple of group rides and just got absolutely destroyed and figured racing can't be any harder, so I'll do that. And so I did the Folsom Crit in late May and did quite poorly, and that kind of got me hooked.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's always that one bright spot, like, oh, I had that one lap that felt really good, and I'm going to come back. And
I really attacked well with two laps to go and then fell off the back. It was a smart move.
You know, I mentioned this before, one of my best friends growing up, a really good rider, but you'd finish a race and he'd get win or get top three, and all he could think about was the pain that he went through, rather than, you know, I've gone through races and been off the back and you're finished and you're like, I'm never doing this again. And then as soon as you're done, you're like, okay, so next year I'm going to do this different. And that, you know, you did bad, and you said, oh, I'm ready to come back for more. That's kind of what keeps us in this stupid sport.
I would agree with that, yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of finding those positives and looking for opportunity to improve. That's why I kept coming back. Just, you know, looking for that additional challenge and not wanting to quit on it.
So you've recently had a discovery of some health problems that you've been able to overcome. And I'll just bring this out because yesterday, we always do this Coffee Republic ride. People know it out in Folsom. And there's a climb in the middle, Ridge Road, and it's pretty good. It's a 10-minute, 12-minute effort. And what is it, about 3 miles, 3.5 miles, somewhere around that range?
2.8.
Has a steep kick at the beginning, and then it mellows out, and then it finishes on a little kick riser. And you went sub 10 yesterday, which was your PR.
Correct.
And you've really impressed lately, your climbing and just your riding in general. But what kind of came about that you...
But most importantly, you impressed Eric Nelson.
I was impressed by having impressed him. So yeah, I think that's a win all around.
That's like Froome coming up to you and saying, "Good job."
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, you had. What was the deal that you, yes. And why did you think you needed to go in and get checked, or did you?
So I've been working with Nate Dunn from Data Driven Athlete for a couple of years, and I started working with him as a coach, and we were getting really good results. But there was a day back in, I want to say, April of this year, where we were out doing a little team ride, and the collective effort wasn't too much if you just look at it from a pure power perspective. And I was just dying. I was getting dropped on every little false flat. I was getting dropped on every climb. And I was just kind of hitting a pretty big emotional low. And we were gearing up for Cascade, which is, it's a pretty big physical and emotional investment. And I was just at the bottom of the well. And so I was talking to Nate, just saying, I'm pretty much ready to quit. This is ridiculous. I can't even hang on group rides. I don't know what's going on. So we kind of looked at the data, and he's like, looking at your TSS, looking at your TSB, you really shouldn't be feeling this way. So, how's your diet? How was your diet on the ride? How was your hydration? And, we kind of checked all those boxes and everything looked good. So, he kind of dug into potential things that could be causing my lack of results. And, he recommended just going to get my blood check to see where I fare for iron and vitamin D, because those are, I guess, a couple of items that you can be deficient in, and then that could negatively affect your results. So, I was kind of not feeling it. I just said, yeah, whatever, I'll go get it looked at. It's going to be fine. I just suck on the bike. So I went into the doctor, and I kind of explained to my situation and what I was looking for in the way of testing. And, he kind of was like, in all likelihood, you're probably fine. It's just riding bikes is hard. So we took the blood test, and it came out that I had really low hemoglobin, really low hematocrit, really low ferritin, really low iron. So I was anemic across the board.
So just on that real quick, so most people probably don't know their numbers from that, but since we're in cycling and some people know the hematocrit, what was your level? Because that's the whole one that we always say, oh, cyclists, they can boost up. This is in the 90s. You can boost up to about a 50. And that anything over was a problem. So people are in their 40s, 40 range naturally. Right. Do you know what yours was at the time?
I don't know off the top of my head, but as I kind of ramble on here, I'll pull up my little medical app.
Okay.
And I can tell you.
Let me ask you, while you're doing that too, you can find that. So I know last year you kind of had, not this year when this had, but the year before, you also had a time period where you were riding well, you were winning races, and then you started to kind of go through a mental slump as well of just kind of, Do you think that had anything related to this, or was that just mental fatigue and just racing a lot?
I think it was just mental fatigue and burnout. I mean, we're really fortunate to have such a long season here, and it's almost a curse in that you somewhat feel obligated to be on form January to September, and it's just, with cycling life and routine life and work life, it's really difficult to balance that and be on peak form for all those things all the time. So
yeah, totally.
You're bound to burn yourself out on one of those.
I remember my coach when we were in Colorado telling us, the winter is good for us and not getting burnt out. So you're just solid in the middle of the year, and you go to California and those guys are early on, they're riding well. Then you have late on races, it's hit and miss if they're not tapering their season right. All right. So anyway, your blood levels.
So my blood levels. So I was, when I got tested in May, let's see, hemoglobin was down around 11, which is, looks like grams per deciliter.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Hematocrit was down to 35%.
Okay.
So in response to that, the doctor recommended that I take iron supplements.
Okay.
And so in addition to doing just the routine blood test, he wasn't too convinced that my results were a result of diet. So he did some additional testing, and it turns out that I have a gluten intolerance. So what happens there, as the doctor explained to me, is the gluten intolerance can kind of mess with your gut, and it, in my instance, it prevents my body.
Is that celiac, or is that something different?
Okay. So my body doesn't absorb iron because the intestinal linings are basically destroyed. So anything that I would eat that would contain iron wouldn't kind of stay in the system long enough to absorb. So the solution to that was cutting out all gluten-containing foods and then taking iron supplements. We did that for
2 months, retested, and the values increased quite significantly. Hematocrit went up to about 45%.
Wow.
Hemoglobin went up to 14.3. The hemoglobin's on the low end of normal, but we're in the normal range instead of being well below that. Hematocrit is kind of right in the middle of the normal range, which is good.
But I think from...
What does that mean for, like, PR-wise on this?
That is about a... a minute, 18 seconds.
That's pretty
ballpark.
Okay, now I...
Well, no, your entire right. What is it, first of all, did it do anything to? So you're not eating gluten. You're obviously your hematocrit coming up 10%. I think that's pretty huge from 35 to, you know, guys that are 45 naturally and they're able to boost it up like Bjarni Riis up to 67. You saw what he did, right? So yeah. So obviously that's awesome. Did it do anything with your weight as well?
No, no real changes there.
You just got stronger.
I just got stronger. I mean, one of the challenges there is going from an everyday diet where you're eating things with gluten to kind of having to pick and choose things. So you're naturally finding yourself eating a little differently.
Yeah.
So it seems like most gluten-free diets trend more toward the healthier alternatives. So I think that just generally helped the diet overall.
Yeah, I know when I tried to lose some weight a few years ago, I tried to basically go gluten-free, but all it really did for me was a conscious effort of everything I'm going to eat. Is this, oh, you know, there's so many pastries and everything that are all, you know, right. Tortilla. You go to Chipotle and that tortilla there is like 400 calories.
Right.
Right. So all you're really doing is you're cutting out a lot of this, the calorie intake
yeah.
for me. And it was a mindset, it just changed it. Yeah. But obviously I didn't have celiac.
And you can figure out how to work around that. Skittles, for example, those are a good option. Snickers bars.
Gluten-free beer.
Gluten-free beer.
Swedish fish, I'm hoping.
I think so. Yeah. It felt a little...
It didn't feel so good
afterward. I didn't read the label as well as I should have, I think.
All right, so you've obviously recovered, and that's good. So yeah. What is that on a difficulty basis for you and your wife as far as fixing meals? Is she on board with this, or is she just kind of saying, you know what, why don't you stop racing, let's eat some gluten?
Yeah, she's been supportive of it. We don't really, the biggest challenge was like, okay, bread and cereal are kind of the big ones you've got to be a little careful for. So gluten-free bread, there really aren't that many good options, so we've kind of just cut that out of the house. Cereal's pretty easy to work around, so I usually just do like breakfast cereal, and that's pretty easy to do with gluten-free options, so it hasn't been cheaper. Instead of pasta, we probably eat a lot more rice.
You could, I mean, my wife and I have done that. Like I said, I've tried, you know, there's gluten-free pasta, there's gluten-free pizza. I've actually enjoyed some of these things.
Yeah.
It's not the worst.
There's a really good gluten-free pizza that we found. It's probably one of the better frozen pizzas we found as well. So I forget the name.
Udi's?
No. Although they have really good options.
I've got the one at Papa Murphy's. Actually, their take and bake. They have one and it's quite good. You should give that a shot.
I'll give that a shot.
See, so you can get fat with all this stuff. The idea is, though, you know.
So I'm still on the gluten-free diet, and then I go back in to check my results. So after two or three months, and we retested the blood, I tapered back down on supplements. So I'm going to go back in a couple more months, and if things still look good, we'll kill off the iron supplements. Go back in a couple months after that, and if things are still okay, then... will not have to do the iron supplementation anymore.
Yeah, I'd probably suggest everyone, you know, go out, get tested.
I would. So there's some downsides to just jumping in and taking an iron supplement if you don't need it. It can actually be more harmful than good if you don't need it. So I'm by no means suggesting that everybody go out and get up their iron.
No, but I remember that was kind of a... Yeah. But I remember doing the 1989, sorry to go back to, Giro d'Italia with Greg LeMond. He was trying to make his comeback and he was really suffering. And then the word out there was that they had found, they did some sort of blood work and they found that he was really low in iron. So pumped in iron and then he won the tour and could have been something else. Blasphemy saying this against Greg, right? But
right.
What's just funny, but I remember in college, there were people that were Greg LeMond haters and they would... say how obviously he was doped right at the time and how you can tell by his results they're so cyclical and it's all due to this. So you know this whole hating and you know blanket of suspicion over people, it's gone on forever. So I don't know what to say about that. Just we always back to doping.
I know. I wouldn't say anything bad about Greg LeMond.
No, he's a nice guy.
If you don't like Greg LeMond, why don't you like Greg? You just don't like
cycling. You don't like Greg LeMond. You don't like cycling. I do like Greg LeMond. I met him, did a little ride with him after he was retired. Yeah.
Yeah, I do the LeMond loop often.
What's the LeMond loop?
It's a local loop up in Nevada City.
Oh.
I guess he used to
train.
So.
Is that just the crit course?
It's not the crit course.
Oh, okay.
It goes around the outskirts of the town.
You know, one thing I wanted to talk about, and we'll do just two quick more topics here. Unless you have something you want to speak about, Kurt, cycling related or your personal life, maybe your kids playing baseball. Yeah, have you been blood tested?
I'm gonna get my blood tested. That's a minute 18 on Ridge.
I went into a doctor a few months ago for something, and she actually wanted me to get my blood tested. So I have my sheet in there from the doctor ready to go into one of the labs, and I just haven't done it. Maybe I could increase my time too.
It has been decreased. You fix whatever was going on with you and be able to ride to your potential, I
feel a lot better.
Quality of life, I'm sure, is just your mental state, and with all of that,
it's a lot less fun.
It's true.
Much better bike rider.
In all honesty, like one of the benefits is after a long ride, I can go home and I just don't feel like I have to lay on the couch for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Go home and do yard work and chores.
Yeah.
So
there's a downside to it.
Right. So I'm always on the go.
One thing I did want to say real quick, kind of in this whole range, is I mentioned before about the Lance Armstrong podcast. And so the question that I want to pose to both of you is, should we even be listening to this? And I know I've asked you off mic before about this, but I'm kind of torn myself because, like I said, I love the analysis. And then there's also just, well, look, if we can forgive Contador and bring him back, can we? I know there's degrees of difference here, of course, but what do you think? Should we even be participating in this guy's?
I don't think it's that bad of a thing. I think he's got enough insight into the sport and can offer some perspective that most other racers don't have, even in the pro level. Granted, his results are based on a pretty elaborate network of doping, but at the same time, he was at the front of the race for all his tours, and I think he's got something to offer that, you know, is a benefit to the cycling community. I don't have a huge issue with it in that perspective. If we have all these other folks that have pretty tarnished pasts participating in cycling, it seems like we shouldn't have too much of an issue with him as well.
Yeah, I listened to his podcast during the Tour of France after you mentioned it a few times, and it was really good. It was incredibly insightful. Some of his understanding of all those little towns and what some of those, even the transition stages, might do to some of those riders was great. But same token, I don't find myself listening to it anymore.
It's not. No more episodes.
No, then you do some Colorado.
He did the cult tour. Yeah, and that one I found was not quite as insightful.
I thought he wasn't going to do that.
So what if you had been listening to the podcast, Chris, I had an update on that. So basically, he couldn't be in conjunction with the race. The race themselves were going to promote him to do it. So he just did his own.
Gotcha.
And which he can do. Okay. And that's what he ended up doing, just kind of from his Airstream in Denver.
Right.
But yeah, I didn't end up listening to the podcast when it was following the Colorado race. To each his own. I mean, obviously you can listen to it if you want. I probably, I don't follow him on Twitter anymore. So
yeah,
I don't know. I don't care to support his career too much.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was interested in, because I actually am torn. I found that being such an integral part of the tour on all these levels, like Froome, it'd be like Froome sitting out there every day watching tour with us and saying, oh, here's the shit I had to do on behind the scenes and all this. And you're like, oh, wow, it's like the veil unleashed. And it's pretty cool. One thing I did like about the Colorado race was he interviewed TJ Eisenhart after the last stage, and that kid actually impressed me. I had this whole Spicoli, him and Finney, where they're just kind of too doped out. I don't know, when they talk, it's sometimes hard to follow. It's almost cringeworthy. Sure. And he carried on a conversation that was, you can follow it. And it was actually, wow. And it was insightful. And I'm like, oh, you know what? This kid actually has more to him than, and he explained the whole necklace, the puka shell thing. I don't know if you've heard that story, but it's actually not a puka shell. He made that of it, but he had got it. He had a date one night and he needed a necklace. He went into his mom's thing and he found this big, funny looking thing. He put it on. He said he loved it. And so now it's a deal. And last issue, as soon as we're coming up here towards the winter, tech. What do you just got a smart trainer, Kurt? Or you had one last year? And give me some ideas or what you think is like your, what do you think of these smart trainers and your winter training?
Yeah. No, I think they're great. Last year.
And explain maybe a little bit about what those are.
So the trainer I had last year was a Cyclops. It was a trainer with power meter built into it that can hook up to Zwift, so that you can not only see, I guess, how many watts you're putting out, but it also changes the resistance based on the grade of like the Zwift video game. So if you're going up a mountain, all of a sudden it feels like you're going up a mountain. Like it's a tougher, pedal stroke that you have to go through. So it feels more real. It's pretty cool. I don't know. It feels more like you're on the road than it was with a traditional trainer setup.
And would you recommend doing that?
Yeah, I would. So last year I was in sort of a weird situation where I didn't have a garage that was cool to sit in. So I didn't use it as much as I probably should.
Where did you use it? Out in the balcony, in the house?
The living room of a house that also, like, you had to heat up at the same time because it was like a wood pellet stove. So it was like...
I've seen Into the Wild. Yeah.
It was an interesting setup, and it didn't work out so well. But I am excited to do it again this year and kind of get into that mode.
Chris, what do you do as far as off-season and training? I know you did the Zwift quite a bit last year.
I did Zwift quite a bit. I kind of got hooked into that. I had a crash last December that resulted in a dislocated shoulder. So
what kind of crash was that? What happened? It's a story.
It's an event called Cyclocross.
So everybody. Cyclocross racer?
I didn't actually start the
race. How was the race?
I crashed in the warm up. So I don't know if I registered. I think I'm officially did not start. Anyway. Okay. Yeah. So
have you ever done a cyclocross race?
I did. I received it, did not finish in that one.
A lot of it's a challenge. Consistent.
Sport. Yeah. So either not starting or not finishing.
Season, sure.
Yeah. I think it's.
Is it coming?
Only room is for improvement.
So how did you crash? Was that you were practicing dismounts?
No, I was doing just a little warm up on the road component of the race, so where I should be most familiar. I was just doing a little wind up to sprint, and front wheel just washed out somehow, and down I went.
Tires were muddy.
No, they were pretty clean at that point.
We're trying pretty hard. So anyway, you messed up your collarbone.
Shoulder.
Sorry.
Dislocated my shoulder. So that resulted in spending 6-8 weeks on the trainer just doing Zwift, and that was a really good way to stay fit when, fortunately it was a really rough winter and I was able to kind of maintain fitness with everybody else in spite of my injury, so that was really good. But I think this year I'll probably end up doing less Zwift.
Now, do you have a smart trainer as well?
I do not. I just have either standard old trainer or I have rollers. I find both to be pretty good.
I'm surprised you haven't fallen off the rollers based on your cyclocross.
I have this little harness I set myself up on. It's pretty elaborate.
It's actually weightless. It's holding you up above the rollers. Right.
The rollers don't actually stick. It's just the tires.
What do you use the harness for anything else during the week?
No, unfortunately.
All right. Well.
So I just have a regular old trainer. The Zwift stuff is good. I find it to be pretty engaging. I find myself doing more group ride-esque stuff when I'm doing Zwift, so going after little sprints or going after little tail ends. And I think that's great. It's just, I'll probably just do some real focused 20-minute efforts or something this winter on the trainer and do some running on the side and just kind of mix in different fitness regimes.
Yeah, running probably less likely to break your shoulder.
You never know. Those trails are rough at night.
At night?
Yeah.
Okay. For me, I just have an old standard trainer. Put your bike in. I watch movies in the garage. I don't know. I don't know if I want to get. I've decided not to get on Zwift as of yet. It just seems like too much complication at this point.
It's not.
I enjoy the solitude of doing my own thing, kind of keeping it, you know, secret. When you're on Zwift, you know, everyone's. I have no excuses. I should try it. That's just so.
You should try it. It's fun. It's just an app on your phone. It's nothing else.
I have a Stages power meter. Well, no, and then I have a Cork for the time trial bike I usually use on the trainer. So how did those connect to?
You need
a doggle or something like that.
Well, you need something that does like an app plus from Bluetooth to get it to your phone.
So I just use my Stages one. I use it, my Stages though goes Bluetooth.
Oh yeah,
so it goes both. So I could use that one then.
Okay,
all right.
You should be good.
Oh, that sounds.
So on the smart trainer for you, Kurt, you have a power meter as well. Have you ever kind of run them simultaneously and evaluated the power consistency between the two?
Yeah. So like I'll have my Garmin on my computer, which is synced to Cork, and then obviously Zwift is reading the Cyclops. Power meter. I guess I didn't really compare the two, you know, side by side. As I was riding, it seemed like one was a little bit lower than the other, but I can't remember which way it was, to be honest with you.
But it was anything significant. No, it wasn't significant. I'm doing 400 on this, 300 on that.
No, and it was like the reaction time, I think, was like maybe a little bit slower on the trainer, I would say. But yeah, it wasn't significant enough that it changed anything.
That's good.
Yeah.
So hopefully we won't have too bad of a winter and we can get some training in. Any other cycling things you guys want to cover before we close this shop and see if we get any sound out of this noisy studio?
I do have one thing. As we're wrapping up this last stage of the Vuelta, I can kind of see taking the last stage easy and Tour de France just because of tradition or whatever, but I think it would be interesting to see them race all the way through the last stage today and not just have it be a parade. We were talking earlier about Froome letting Contador have his day in the mountains, and some people thinking that you should just, you know, it's a race, you race to the end. And sometimes I think it's a little silly that we do these little parades as we finish up these. It'd be like, you know, you think about Paris-Roubaix, it's like, oh, well, let's just race to the Velodrome. Whoever gets to the Velodrome first gets to do some celebration laps. It's like, race to the end. Because you've got guys that are 5th through 7th that are within a few seconds of each other. It'd be interesting to see them race it up.
Well, the only way you're going to get a race to the finish today. You're going to start easy, but with Trenton needing to, he wants a green jersey. So with that in mind, the sprinters are going to want to get that. The only other way you're going to get something like that is doing a time trial on the last day, unless you had a mountaintop finish. So when they've had the time trial on the last day, you know, they've done that in the Tour. 89 is the one we've talked about. They had it actually in the Vuelta because I think it's the first year Levi got on the podium with the final time trial, and he jumped a few people. I think Harris had won that year, and then he ended up getting third. So that was when, oh, he's got a new American coming up. Well, anyway, so I don't know if you can ever get that unless you have a time trial at the end.
I can still want it.
I agree, because it's kind of boring. Like, that's why we're not really watching today. I'll pull up the last 1K and see what happened. Yeah. Kurt, you got any final thoughts on the Vuelta or any other
things? Yeah, those final thoughts on the Vuelta. Excited for winter. Excited for the Profeto, the Stone brand, the Flex and Flex gear, getting that stuff out. You guys have any thoughts on intermediate sprints and group rides and the chase group competing for those? Any thoughts on those?
The chase group?
Yeah, the chase group. We come up to an intermediate sprint, and the chase group, who is clearly in line with the lead group, who's already taken all the points for that, still has one or two guys that go for the intermediate sprint. Does that make any sense?
No, and what that really means is those guys probably have no clue as to what's going on up the road, and because if they did, they wouldn't be going for it, or they're just... I don't know. That is an annoying factor. What do you have a specific incident that just took place? Maybe yesterday?
No, you guys have all been there. You've been there while you're trying to chase down three guys who are off the front. Your group of five is there for a reason, because you weren't as strong as those three guys, so you really need to work together. And somebody goes for an intermediate sprint, throws off the rhythm of the group, all of a sudden the rotations... I don't know. I'm just... It bugs me. That's all.
Is the person going for the sprint, do they have somebody in the group off the front?
No.
They do not. No.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that at all. You know, we talked about this yesterday. My idea on the group rides is it's perfect training ground for your team, not only for yourself, because some guys go out there and they're like, oh, it's training. So I'm just, you know, I'm chasing down my teammate. And my thinking is, you can do training, you can ride hard, but it's also mental training for how you act as a team in races. And I think we do that all the time without step. So what's your idea on that? And do you agree with that?
Yeah, those.
And that's why you're so frustrated about this sprint.
That's why it's easy. Race rides are my race season. So it's a very big deal to me.
Yeah, and you've been doing well on those the last few weeks. You know, we can't all live up to Chris, but
Chris, yeah,
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I saw Kurt in 2 days this week going really promising moves early in the rides and holding up till near the end. So
how do you feel about stoplights aiding your advantage? He did that not only Wednesday but yesterday as well. Not skipping yesterday through them though. I'm just saying the stoplight just aided. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
I think as long as you're not running the light, then you're all good. If you happen to be 20 seconds up the road and you get through the light, good for you for having the incentive to go hard.
Even yesterday, we were in a group and it was a conscious effort to lay down extra power going into the stoplight. In fact, somebody said, there's a stoplight up here, we got to go hard to it to try and get it. So
yeah,
I think that's part of those rides. If you get,
but it was red.
Yeah, we stopped, and then we got to go again, and then I think the...
It was the quickest light I've ever seen, seriously.
Yeah, that was shocking, because I looked back, and I thought, for sure, you guys would be there, but yeah, you got the red.
Yeah, and actually, I think that was fair as can be, because you guys had a big advantage going in there, and kept it going out, so good for you.
Good stuff.
Yeah, okay. Well, on tap, I think Northern California, I think we only have Oakland Crit left, is that correct? Or is there, because that other, what's the one, I want to say Town Center, but that's not right. Coppertown. Coppertown got canceled. So
CCCX also got canceled.
No. Is that a...
That was the Central Coast Road Series.
That's why. It's down by Fort Ord or something like that.
That one got canceled as well. Yeah, it's Oakland, and that's also the NCNCA Elite Crit Championship this year.
Call him Garrett Hankins.
Garrett?
I think he wins.
Not Willie?
No, I think he gets his revenge.
Okay. Wow. I'm actually going to talk to Willie. I got confirmation last night. He's back on the grid, I want to say. And so I only say that because we were having some miscommunication. So I plan on talking to him this next week, and we'll see what he thinks about upcoming Oakland. I know he's done well there. And we'll get a little recap of his Giro, which looked to be pretty good, having no teammates in that race. It was an impressive finish, actually. I don't know if you saw the any of the videos of that.
I did, yeah. Good race.
Good race. All right. So other than that, thanks for joining today, and take care.
Thanks.
Chris?
Goodbye.